obsessed with all things ovine, there is seriously something about sheep and always something new to learn about keeping, breeding and farming them. Welcome to the Sheep Show podcast. I'm Jill Noble from Holston Valley Farm and Sheep Stud and your host. The Sheep Show podcast exists to help you, no matter where you are in the world, what sheep you breed, what size your flock is. This podcast will help your sheep knowledge and your shepherding confidence grow. And it's a two-way street. I love to hear from you and find out how your sheep journey is going. Contact me via Instagram at Holston Valley Farm or via email jill@holstonvalleyfarm.com.au. Come along on this episode as we explore the amazing world of sheep and sheep farming together. So a bit of a bittersweet episode for you today, and it's my last night in Ireland after being here for 5 weeks, and bittersweet because I arrived in Ireland 5 weeks ago. My dad was sick and he subsequently passed away. I did get to see him before he passed away, which was really lovely, and we got to spend some time together. And then after I got to spend 5 weeks here, mainly lambing sheep and doing estate administration. But gee, did I learn a lot. So I thought I would, I suppose, fill you in on what's been going on and also tell you all the things that I have been exposed to and learned and experienced over, I suppose, this very, very bittersweet holiday, which is coming to an end. Now, the good news is it's coming to an end, but I'm actually bringing my brother back to Australia with me for a couple of weeks. And of course, I asked him what he wanted to do, and he said he wanted to see some sheep. So so I'll keep you posted on how that that journey and that little holiday goes, and hopefully it'll be more sweet than sort of the bittersweet side of it. But hey, I wanted to really, I suppose, share with you all the things that I got to do here, and all the sort of what I feel like I'm leaving with a huge kit bag, suitcase of all these new skills and new insights. And oh wow, it's just been phenomenal. Let me talk you through some of the things. I've almost got a page full here of things that I've been cataloging over the last couple of weeks. But one of the things I got to do was sort of shear. And a lot of you will know that not something I generally have to do with my particular sheep. But I did get to shear. Now, it was kind of an interesting shearing experience because we were, one of the things we did was shaving or shearing bellies of sheep. Andrew, my brother, had a group of, they call them hoggets, but they're like maiden ewes. And he wanted to prepare them for a friend of his to lamb when, ironically, he's in Australia. And one of the tasks he had to do to make it easier was just to shave the bellies of those sheep. And they are crossbred wool sheep. So we got to do that. It was really interesting. And as you know, I haven't had a huge amount of exposure to shearing, and most people who breed sheep, obviously not everyone, but a lot of people do their own shearing, but not everyone does. So I have a few little hints and tips for you about shearing. And the key one is don't pull the wool. And when you pull the wool, you are very, very likely to nick the skin. So don't pull the wool if you're shearing, you know, when you'd sort of pull the wool taut, and that can mean that you nick the skin. So that's a really good tip that I didn't know. And it really did work when we sort of were more relaxed with it and didn't pull the wool in the belly. It was much fewer nicks. And then the other thing that we realized with the shearing was when the sheep's skin was really dry, it became much like our skin, much more easy to tear, so open to tearing and things like that. And the good news is we got to do some sheep shopping here as well, that I'll tell you about as well. So they had lots of things to sort of administer when and if there were any nicks on the sheep. But really interesting, just a little experience to sort of shear those bellies. And I guess it has been really interesting lambing wool sheep. And I've got another cute little story that I'll tell you about in a second, about some lambs and their experience when they're looking for what lambs do. But when you shear wool, or when you lamb wool sheep, so I'm talking about woolly, they're quite woolly sheep, and some of them have actually quite sort of long wool on their bodies. But there's a lot of stuff that gets in the way, so it can be quite difficult to see the bag, the milk bag. It can be very difficult to see any swelling on the back end of the ewe. It can be very difficult to see the staining on the udder. All these little things just became kind of almost harder to see than I would have experienced in the past. And I thought, wow, that's kind of interesting. So cleaning up, and we did a lot of cleaning up on some of these maidens to just make it much, much easier to see what was going on. And that little story was so cute. It's kind of a longer story, but we donated a pregnant ewe to my cousin who has a Texel stud over here. And the idea was that they had a Texel ewe that came down with mastitis. They had two really high quality breeding animals that particular ewe had lambed, and they wanted to have those animals, retain those animals in the stud, potentially anyway. So didn't want to bottle feed them. So we donated this ewe that we thought was going to lamb, who did subsequently lamb. And I'll tell you a little bit about what they did with the sort of do the fostering. So they actually had two really nice, healthy lambs that this ewe produced very much on her own. But they had to take those lambs off and put the Texel stud animals on. But the Texels, the ewe that they were that lambed was a what's called a Lanark ewe. So she is black faced, black legged, and this long wool, quite thick long wool, often like Scottish black faced sheep, those sorts of things. So that's what the ewe looks like. And the Texel lambs that were put on that ewe didn't understand or didn't know to look beneath the wool for the teats. They just saw this wall of wool and just stopped. And the other lambs went just kind of burying through the wool to find the teats, and just sort of understood that that's what they needed to look for. And now we're talking lambs that are, 10 minutes old, and already the instinct is kicking in. So the Texels actually couldn't see literally the forest for the trees. And it was really quite funny, and the other lambs just knew exactly what to do. So wow, how amazing is that? That even down to different breeds, they have different sort of nurturing instincts and nuzzling instincts. And just I thought that was quite incredible, just to sort of and funny, just to sort of see that, to see that as well. So that was just a few little experiences there with cleaning up the sheep. And being able to have more visuals of what's going on, and then the visuals that the lamb actually has too, on how what they're, I suppose, genetically predisposed to potentially means that they know what to look for or not, as the case may be, kind of a short-wooled Texels. By the way, we were cleaning up some Texels as well as those Lanark ewes, and they were way easier to clean up on the belly. So pros and cons, of course. We're just talking about, I suppose, one particular breed or different experiences with that with different breeds. So yeah, so some funny little stories there that we experienced. The other thing that we used extensively over the last couple of weeks was this concept called, I've never seen it in Australia, called a foster crate. So it's a, engineered crate, so manufactured crate. That you put the ewe in, and the front of it has a head bale, and the ewe's head gets caught effectively. So the ewe can stand and lie and eat and drink, and sort of move forward, but they can't turn around on the foster lamb. And gee, we had some fabulous successes. Like we fostered, if we fostered 15, 20, 25 lambs onto ewes, it was just incredible the amount of fostering that actually went on. And the labor required to do that fostering compared to my style of fostering, which is sort of, tying the ewe up and, going visiting them and hoping for the best and pushing the lamb on the ewe and, really time consuming. These foster crates basically mean that you just put the ewe in, put the lamb in a pen near the foster crate, and the lamb, as long as the lamb has good instincts and a little bit of sort of drive and determination, then the lamb will find the teat and drink, and the ewe can't, apart from kicking, sometimes they do, the ewe basically is, eventually will take to the lamb. Now we did use some foster crates like for 3 or 4 days, and they worked. And in some other instances, we were like having the ewe in the foster crate for 10 days straight, and it still didn't work. But more often than not, with the foster crate and good instinct and a good sort of hardy, resilient lamb, the success was quite amazing. And the foster crates really, really made things so much easier. So I don't know where, how I can find myself a foster crate. But gee, I think if I can get someone to make it, then that would be really amazing to sort of incorporate into the system. And particularly when you're, really thinking that every lamb counts, and particularly every lamb you don't have to bottle feed really, really counts. Talking of bottle feeding, I did end up, and I still have here. In fact, my last job tomorrow morning before we hop on the plane will be to do my bottle feeding. I've been bottle feeding sometimes up to 8 bottle fed lambs. I still have, I think, 6 at the moment. And again, these are the ones that we've been fostering. 2 different ewes. There was one beautiful, beautiful purebred Lanark ewe lamb that I absolutely fell in love with. And we tried her on 5 different ewes, tried to foster her, the poor thing. So many different situations that we tried. And believe it or not, this last ewe that we've just worked with her on was a first timer, a first time maiden ewe who just tragically lost her lamb. The lamb stuck its head through a gate, and some of the other ewes in the pen that were outside the pen where the ewe and the lamb were just pushed against the pen and broke the lamb's neck. Anyway, awful tragic story, but that meant that that particular ewe lamb became available, and we tried this beautiful little foster lamb on her. And hey, presto, it actually worked again, thanks very, very much to that foster crate. And some meal that they particularly enjoy. So foster crates, big hit, and very, very much saving so much time and so much frustration, and the success rate really, really high. So listen, thumbs up for that all the way. And have a Google, see what you can find. I'm sure you'll be able to find some visuals of what I'm talking about. You might be even Andrew had, I kind of created a foster crate with a panel, a sheep panel at one stage, that had a bit of a loose bar and was able to tie up a ewe in that. So sometimes you can just do a little DIY job as well, and it could work just as well. So really very good there, and a good little thing to sort of bear in mind. What else? Yes, talking of sort of meal, the feed, really interesting in terms of what they feed sheep here, particularly when the sheep are inside. A lot of, not all, but a lot of lambing over here is done indoors, and then so you bring the sheep in for like some weeks before they lamb. They lamb indoors, and then you might move the sheep out generally quite quickly. Like sometimes Andrew was moving out sheep that had lambed that morning, that afternoon. Now, it very much depended on the weather. That was the key deciding factor about whether we moved sheep out. So it was, everything's very much weather dependent, including the lambing indoors. But the feed, I could not believe the amount of hay these sheep eat. They love the hay over here. They really, really like it. They will eat silage too. But we definitely found that they did better on hay. And they seemed to really like the hay a lot better. And I just couldn't believe it. I know I've been over here, and obviously everyone on the team on the farm have been looking after things, and we actually didn't have rain in Australia for like 2 months, down on my farm. And we did feed out a little bit of hay. So, they did have to eat hay, but they were incredibly hungry to need to eat hay. Whereas, I think these sheep over here, just quite incredible. And they do get a little bit of meal. Andrew was giving them a little bit of meal in the morning, but very, very minimal meal. So these ewes were lambing, and doing very, very well just on hay alone. Drinking a lot of water as well, as often they would when they're eating that sort of feed. But that was really quite interesting just to sort of see them eat the hay, and then sometimes eating the silage. Another really cool story was we had this mob again of quite young sheep, and then just happened to have in there one old ewe that was pregnancy scanned, and sort of late in lamb, and she was running around in with the young sheep. And we had a little sort of pen set up with a couple of panels in there, but there was no sheep in there, and the pen was open. And we knew that this older ewe was likely to lamb. And I went down and found her, and she'd put herself in the pen and subsequently lambed. But we just thought, how clever. She obviously had been in a pen before and knew the sort of the safety and security of it. Maybe, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was just pure coincidence, but it was incredibly funny. And I said to Andrew, "Did you put that ewe in the pen?" And he said, "No, I didn't. I didn't even know she'd lamb." I said, "Yep, she put herself in the pen, lambed herself, and everything is doing really well. And she's very happy in this little pen." So, just instincts of some of these sheep is really, really quite incredible. We also saw the instincts come out, and Andrew is breeding. He does breed. He also has some Texels and Texel crosses. He's got some Cheviots. He has got some mules sheep. He's got some Wensleydale sheep, and he has got some Amberfield, I think, sheep as well, and Blue Fleece Leicester crosses. So a huge range. Which is very typical of the type of sort of range of sheep that you might see on any one farm here. And we noticed the mothering instincts really, really vary between the breeds. Now, where we noticed this most was when we were putting the sheep out on pasture. So again, Ireland is kind of interesting. A lot of farmers have, 10 and 20 and 30 acres here and there. So quite sort of spread out, small acreage. And that means that they might do one thing on their sort of farm where the sheds are, and then they will do other things on some other land. So Andrew was lambing down at our home farm, and then we have another farm, which is a few minutes down the road, and that you'd have to drive to. And that's where he was putting the sheep out. Some really good grass over there. So he was putting the sheep out on that pasture. So that meant a trailer ride for the sheep and the lambs. So you put them all in together, in the one trailer. You might have 10 ewes and, 15 or 20 lambs or whatever it might be. And when we let the ewes and lambs out, Andrew would let one at a time out. So he would let out the ewe, then find the lamb that's attached to that ewe or belongs to that ewe or the lambs, and then put those lambs, well, they actually put the lambs out first into the paddock, then the ewe out next. And then the idea is that that ewe then finds those lambs, joins up with those lambs, and walks off with those lambs, but not getting mixed up with other ewe mobs or other lambs. So just to sort of help with mothering. And gee, we noticed some incredible instincts with these, particularly these Lanark ewes, where when they got out, and let's say they got out of the pen and their lambs were, they had twins and one was here and the other was just a few meters across the way, that ewe desperately wanted to find her lambs. So the instinct to sort of mother up and bond with the lamb was so incredibly strong. Like, they didn't care about the grass, even though there's beautiful grass there to eat. They didn't get distracted. They were on the job. Some of the other breeds, not so much. We got them there. That was okay. But you could just see that some of them were like, I don't care about this lamb. I've got food. Or I can see green grass and I don't care about anything else. And, did I even have lambs? I forgot about them already. So just incredible. Now, again, I'm thinking, these are not all of them are. Some of these are first, a lot of them were first timers. He was lambing down an awful lot of first timers. But just, it's just the genetic instinct that is so strong in some of these ewes. And you just can't help. And he loves them. You just can see why they are so popular, particularly where the terrain is difficult and perhaps the environment is challenging and or more challenging, like in some Scottish Highlands or wherever it might be. You can just see why they would just do anything to protect their lamb, to keep their lamb warm, to mother their lamb, and that lamb survivability would be incredibly high as a result. So anyway, really nice to see, really enjoyable, and really, really obvious. And I thought that was just such a really interesting sort of experiment, almost just looking at the different breeds and just experiencing the different mothering instincts in the different breeds. And it's not that the other breeds were awful. It's just that one particular breed was exceptional, really, really stood out. And it was quite consistent in that particular breed and breed family. The one of the other things, I know we use this and I've mentioned it as well, but they were my brother in particular was fastidious with this, and I noticed just been on a few other farms too, and there it's, if there's anything that they have this, and that is iodine, an iodine spray for joint ill. Obviously, lambing indoors, there's a huge risk of infection. There's a huge risk of disease. And joint ill particularly is a huge problem. So they're really, really fastidious with the iodine. And it was really good to see. Bedding was the other thing that I noticed. It's a huge cost here when you're lambing indoors, cleaning sheds, preparing sheds, bedding sheds, and then, of course, doing it all again and cleaning them out. And but straw, it seems to be the bedding of choice. And it was brilliant, amazing straw, really beautiful, beautiful straw. You just wanted to sort of fall asleep in it yourself. And that seems to be the thing that really works best for bedding sheep here. And it just did really, really well. Now, some of these sheep do get lambed down on sheds that are purpose-built, and some of them would have slatted floors where manure and liquid could fall through safely, but the sheep wouldn't. So some of the sheds are really quite well designed, not all of them, but regardless, the straw and just putting straw on top of straw really, really, really worked well. The other thing that my brother was just so incredibly skilled at is this tube feeding. And again, milking sheep to get the colostrum. They do use powdered colostrum, but he used a lot of colostrum direct from the ewe, or even we used, and I'll tell you about that, we used, ewes with big bags and lambs to sort of feed or be sort of milk bars for other ewes that needed a bit of a feed. So it was really quite interesting doing all this swapping around of lambs. But the tube feeding was something incredible to see. And he's had a couple of little tricks that I thought I'd share with you. And so when the lamb didn't suck or needed a feed or whatever it might be, and this could be a lamb that's going to stay with its mother, it doesn't even have to be a bottle-fed lamb, he would hold the lamb up by the front legs. So front two legs, the lamb would be sort of hanging down. He would get his tube filled with his colostrum, whether it's direct from the ewe or another ewe or bottled colostrum or powdered colostrum. And he would dip. If you've seen a little tube feeder, it's got a little kind of vessel, like a syringe at the top, and then a tube coming out of that, which effectively goes down into the lamb's stomach. And what Andra did was he would dip the tube in the milk and make it sort of wet and sort of slimy, if you like, and then use that to feed down the throat of the lamb, with the lamb in a very sort of extended position. So legs in the air, throat straight, and just feed the tube down. And it was just so quick, so easy. And he was doing it in the field, and like literally in the shed or wherever we needed to sort of give a lamb a bit of a boost. Again, millions of times he did this. And the idea, of course, is you don't want to keep doing it for the lambs, but sometimes it's just helpful to get that lamb through that first day and get some colostrum in its belly. And this really natural, amazing way of tube feeding. And I can see that he would not be without a tube feeder in lambing time. It's like, tool number one for what I could see. Quite amazing. Wetting that tube down and then moving it down as well. Let's go back to those little Texel lambs that I mentioned a few minutes ago that were born. This little tip came from my aunt and uncle run that Texel stud, and have a business called Noble Pedigrees, and they do Texels and also Charolais cows. But they had this ewe that we had donated, if you like, to be this sort of surrogate mother. And what they did was, when the two lambs were born, that's the ewe's actual own two lambs, they came to that birth a little bit late. Now, if you're at the birth or whatever to do this, all you would need to use is all the fluids from the ewe. But in this case, they came a little bit too late. The ewe had licked the lambs, and some of the lambs were actually sucking, and the ewe had sort of dried herself up. There's no fluids to use. So they got a bucket of water and salt, and they dipped the lambs in the bucket. So these are the two lambs that were born from that particular ewe. They dipped those lambs in that bucket of salt and water. And then the two lambs that they wanted to foster on the ewe, they then dipped those two lambs in the same bucket. So the lambs were wet, and the smell of those lambs were on these new lambs. One of the old lambs were on the new lambs, and then the salt, the ewe goes to sort of, I suppose, is this very much attracted to the salt. So wants to lick the lamb to lick the salt. And then they poured meal. How cheeky is this? They actually poured meal, so pellets or whatever, on top of the lambs. And then the ewe, of course, was quite hungry at this stage. So she started to eat the pellets, lick the lambs, get the salt, and therefore mother the lambs. So kind of mad stuff in my book, but just so incredibly clever. Bucket of water, dip the hopefully you'll never have to do this, sort of taking lambs off ewes, but imagine if you had a dead lamb. Yeah, this is a likely story I'm thinking for myself. You have a dead lamb, maybe you're thinking, I want to do this quickly. So obviously you can skin the dead lamb. We know that. And that does work very, very well, but this is just another option. Dip that dead lamb in the water, salt and water. Then put the lamb you want to foster in the salt and water, and then put some meal on that lamb that you want to foster. Now, Andrew, the other thing Andrew does when he fosters lambs on to use was he tied up the legs of the lamb so that the lamb that the ewe thinks is just newborn, the lamb doesn't actually get up and run away or get up and sort of frighten the ewe, thinking, why are you being so agile and you should be a little bit more docile and slow to stand. So kind of a funny thing to do. I sort of asked, how long would you keep the legs tied for? And he's talking like an hour or two to keep the legs tied so that the ewe could lick and sort of get to know the lamb before the lamb was too boisterous. So kind of cute, but interesting to sort of look at that as well. So some crazy little techniques and tips and things like that. And you know, listen, I think the sort of the moral of the story here is if you ever get the chance to lamb sheep in a different country, go for it. Even if it's just a weekend, wherever you may be, you know, maybe you're traveling around, you know, a different country or whatever it might be. Just see what you can do. See if you can get onto a sheep farm or make connections with someone and go and just spend a day or two. And I was very lucky. I got to spend 5 weeks, and it was just like as I said, incredibly bittersweet, because I really, really did enjoy all of this aspect. And it was really quite a good refuge, I suppose, for us when we were working through all of the challenges that, of course, grief brings to a family and everything that we had to deal with, and all of the administration aspects, which I'll probably do a podcast on, because it's a whole other minefield, farm administration following a death in the family where there's a farm asset, and oh my goodness, it's just a minefield. But anyway, more of that perhaps in a later podcast. But yeah, just some lessons from the Irish Isle and lambing in the Irish Isle for a couple of weeks. And I'm sure there's something there that might be a tip for you or a strategy for you, or if not, just some strange things that people actually do and things that work and observations that that I've really noticed. And you know, I think that's just such a good experience for me, and one that I hope I get to do again. I really, really do. Very much looking forward to lambing my own sheep. I feel I've had a bit of a warm-up season this year, getting over here in March and April to sort of lamb sheep over here. And feel very, very lucky. And this year in particular, we often talk about how many lambings are in us. Well, I think I'm going to have two lambings this year. So one over here in Ireland, and then one at home that I have to go back and prepare for over the next couple of weeks. I've organized my pregnancy scanning. I'm going to take my rams out on the weekend. So all of that is on the agenda and on the horizon, and it'd be so good to have my brother with me to help with that. So anyway, I'm so nice to be back. Sorry I've been missing in action. It has been a little bit challenging, and hopefully you've picked up a few little tips and tricks from this podcast, and hopefully that'll help you lamb a little bit more creatively this season.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sheep Show podcast. Please take a moment to share this episode via your podcast app, email, or social media channels. Each share helps us reach listeners just like you who can benefit from our sheep-focused content. Let me know how your sheep journey is going. Contact me via Instagram at Holston Valley Farm, or via email, jill@holstonvalleyfarm.com.au. Until next time, sheep well.